We just had a kind of an interesting experience here. We were ready to start the show. The announcer had just made the announcement, and then they stopped. The man in the control room sent out the message, "The bishop has loused it up." And I did. Because there's always a little time for a commercial, and I walked out. I spoiled it, so we started again. When I was coming in to the airport the other day, there was a soldier who evidently had been away for a couple of years, and his wife was there, young wife, to meet him at the airport, and they had a very warm embrace, and he was looking over her shoulder as he embraced her, and he says, "Oh, there goes Kitty McCoy." And the wife said, "Who is she?" Well, he said, "She was the stewardess on our flight." She said, "How did you know her name?" Oh, he said, "The names were up in the bulletin board. Pilot, co-pilot, stewardess." She said, "What was the pilot's name?" This telecast is not going to be what you think it is. I know you've heard the song, "Love is a Many Splendored Thing," but I'm going to tell you the origin of that expression, "a many splendored thing." I'm going to tell you who really wrote it, but I will tell you in a minute. It is a very interesting life because it's somewhat related to our age, in which there is a fondness for flight from consciousness. What is there, anyway, in human nature that makes it rather anxious to evade and escape consciousness and responsibility? Alcohol, dope, sleeping tablets, whatever they happen to be. A way to avoid the responsibility of being awake. And I'm going to tell you the story of a man who had a flight from consciousness. And in this story, we find revealed the unconscious influence of little things. Jean Guiton, a member of the French Academy, said that while he was a prisoner of the Nazis in Germany, one night he and a number of other prisoners amused themselves by each telling how his mother and father met. Circumstances were quite accidental. Sale of a lottery ticket. Chance meeting. Fall on the street. Blind date. Wrong address. And here, as a result of these trivial things, here were men that were prisoners under a totalitarian system. It was a little thing that influenced the life of Francis Thompson, who wrote, "Love is a Many Splendored Thing." And what was that small thing? Well, this young man started for the priesthood, and he was told he did not have a vocation. And then he went into medicine. His fondness was literature. He used to produce as a little boy the plays of Shakespeare for his sisters. And as he was studying medicine in the University of Manchester, he roamed into every bookstore, and at that particular time there had just appeared a life of De Quincey. He evidently had mentioned the fact that at home that he loved De Quincey. And on his 17th birthday, his mother gave him De Quincey's famous work, The Confessions of an Opium Eater. And his 17-year-old eyes fell upon this line of De Quincey. Why at the age of 17 should I have become a prisoner and a prey to this drug? And lost my mind and my freedom. The mother never intended that her son Francis Thompson should ever follow in the steps of Thomas De Quincey. But he did. So he went in for the psychedelic, for the flight from the unconscious. And here there's a curious parallel between the life of De Quincey and the life of Thompson. De Quincey lived earlier than Thompson. And De Quincey became a dope fiend. He went to London, to Soho Square. So did Thompson. And this further parallel, when they went to Soho Square, De Quincey had in his pocket a book of English poetry, we do not know which poet it was, and a copy of the Greek dramatist Euripides. When Thompson went, he had in one pocket Blake and in the other pocket Sophocles. When they went to London, they both went to the same place, Soho Square. How well I know it. I've spent 5 years of my life in Soho Square. Not continuously, but many, many summers and many winters during my university days. It acquired its name in the 17th century because that was the area of London where the huntsmen used to gather to chase the hounds. And the head huntsman would call the hounds with, Soho! It became known as Soho Square. It's very famous. Just a block away is Greek Street. That's where Karl Marx lived for a third of his life, in great poverty. This founder of communism, his wife said, Karl, if you had only made more capital instead of writing about it, the whole world would have been better off. I had many experiences there in Soho Square with the type of person, of course, that Thompson actually is and was. But here are the two of them, decades apart, roamed the street. Thompson made a little money here and there, chasing cabs, holding a horse, selling matches, running an errand. Just a bum. A bum. Emaciated and thin, and drugged and hunger. No one was there to befriend him except a woman of the streets. And one wonders in all of literature if there ever was a greater tribute paid to a woman of the streets than Thompson paid this woman. He wrote about her in a poem to Monica Meynell. We will tell you about the Meynells in a moment. And this is his description. Then there came past a child like thee, a spring flower, fallen from the budded coronal of spring. A spring flower fallen from the budded coronal of spring. And through the city streets blown withering, she passed, oh, brave, sad, lovingest, tender thing. And of her scant pittance did she give that I might eat and live Then fled a swift and trackless fugitive. The same thing happened to De Quincey. When he was in the depths of poverty and degradation, a woman of the streets befriended him. We know her name. Her name was Anne. St. Augustine never gave the name of the woman with whom he lived before he was converted. Thompson never gave the name of this one. But he went out and searched for her. Now, why he searched is interesting. He gathered up in dusty, old, dirty papers an article and a few poems, and he sent them to Wilfred Meynell, who was the editor of Merry England. And in the letter to Wilfred Meynell, he said, "You may return the manuscript and a rejection slip to Francis Thompson, Charing Cross, Post Office, General Delivery." He never heard for 9 months. So in those 9 months, he went into despair. He wanted to find this woman. He could not do it. She said to him as she left, "You are always a genius. You're above me." And sinking lower and lower, he then took up his residence in Covent Garden. Covent Garden at one end in London is the Opera House. Down the street, Maiden Lane Church. You go down two or three steps to go into it. Wish we had an hour and a half. I would tell you about an interesting character that I met there. But in television, you get time in segments. And then in front of the opera was Covent Garden. Covent Garden was where part of the produce of England was brought every morning. So in those days of Thompson was born in 1859. In those days, there were two-wheeled carts, horses, baskets, dirt, and refuse. And used to sleep under those carts, being awakened by the pounding of the horses' hoofs. And I wonder if anyone ever weary of life ever penned such lines as these. "Forlorn and faint and stark, I had endured the watches of the dark and the abashless inquisition of each star." The abashless inquisition of each star. Yea, was the outcast mark of all those heavenly passers' scrutiny. Stood bound and helpless for time to shoot its barbed minutes at me. Suffered the trampling hoof of every hour in night's slow-wheeled car. Until the tardy dawn, dragging me at length from under those red wheels and bled of strength, I awaited the inevitable last. So he decided to take his life. He'd saved up his pennies, bought enough of dope to kill himself. Under these wheels, he could see a distant clock on the spire of a church. It was that prompted him to say the time was shooting its barbed minutes at him. He took half of the dope. And he felt a hand on his. It held him back from the fatal other half. He said it was the hand of Chatterton, a poet that had lived 100 years before. He gave up the attempt at suicide, and the next day, news came to him that Wilfred Meynell wanted to see him. The 9 months had passed. Now begins a kind of change of life. Wilfred Meynell attempts a cure, sends him out to the Abbey of Storrington. And here we enter into a new phase of his life. His love of children. And as he roamed about the fields of Storrington, he met a little girl whose name was Daisy Stanford. And this is what he wrote to Daisy. Here she came with a few tokens, raspberries and such things, and he said that his own heart went down to her hand. But her beauty smoothed earth's furrowed face. She gave me tokens three. A look. A word of her winsome mouth. And a raspberry. The fairest things have fleetest end. Their scent survives their clothes. But the rose's scent is bitterness to him that loved the rose. We will continue in a moment. How often an adult will have an inexpressible love for a sweet child. It's unreciprocated. They do not know they're loved. And this is Thompson's pain. She went her unrepentant way. She went and left with me the pang of all the partings gone and the partings yet to be. She left me marveling why my soul was sad that she was glad at all the sadness in the sweet and the sweetness and the sad. And then he ends. Nothing begins. Nothing ends. It is not paid with moan. For we are born in others' pain. And perish in our own. The love went out from his life. But then he found some solace in little Olivia Meynell. Sweet little child, but here was his life spoiled. And with the pillaring hours about to crush him, he seemed afraid of this beautiful innocence. And he wrote, I fear to love thee, sweet, because love's the ambassador of loss. Love's the ambassador of loss. White flake of childhood, clinging so to my soiled raiment, thy shy snow at tenderest touch will shrink and go. Love me not, delightful child, my heart by man's snares beguiled, has grown timorous and wild. It would fear thee not at all, wert thou not so harmless, small. Because thy arrow's not yet dire, are still unbarbed with destined fire. I fear thee more than hadst thou stood full panoplied in womanhood. All the while, he's being haunted. Haunted by something. And I told you of that poem of haunting. I gave it to you one year, The Hound of Heaven, that he wrote. He went back again to dope. The Maynell still cared for him. But this hound was pursuing him. But despite this shell, that shell that first came to the Maynells, he had no stockings on and his toes were out through his shoes and dirty old brown coat, no shirt. Consumptive, because of the nights he slept under the cartwheels of London. He still had this love that pulled him. Probably that was pulling him at the beginning of his life, and so he wrote, "O world invisible, we view thee. O world intangible, we touch thee. O world unknowable, we love thee. Turn but a stone and start a wing. Tis ye, tis your estranged faces that miss the many splendored things." Love's the many splendored thing. Not earth love. Heaven love. That Thompson saw everywhere. And haunted by that love, he went finally to his reward. And one day, well, in London, I went out to Kensal Green Cemetery. And I asked someone whom I had met in the cemetery, "Do you know where the tomb or the grave of Francis Thompson is?" "No, I never heard of him." So I walked and walked. And I finally came to a slab that read, "Francis Thompson, 1859-1907. And then there came a line, an unforgettable line that drew one back to all of his loves of childhood. And that last line on the tombstone was, "Look for me in the nurseries of heaven. Love's a many splendor." I'll be with Francis Thompson, so look for me in the nurseries of heaven. Bye now, and God love you.